You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Corinth was a fellowship that Paul had personally initiated, and he obviously felt a sense of responsibility regarding its faithfulness to the vision that he'd set out for them. But clearly, someone had written to him and said, you know, so-and-so is saying this, and so-and-so is doing that. And so Paul sends off a response that we've come to know as 1 Corinthians. The whole letter is full of do's and don'ts and clarifications about theological perspectives. The passage we're hearing today is part of a section where Paul is reminding his readers that he didn't come to them with fancy words of wisdom or eloquence, but with demonstrations of the Spirit, showing people the values Jesus lived as Paul understood them. It may be a bit jarring because our passage is picking up the argument in kind of mid-thought, but listen to what Paul is saying. Essentially, look, I don't know what you're hearing exactly, but whatever it is will die with whoever the immature, attention-seeking, juvenile grifter that's preaching it. What we're talking about here are the big picture things, mysteries that aren't ours to know, but which we get a hint of as we work to live with the kind of compassion and integrity that we see in Jesus. Not pulling his punches, Paul says, look, we're the mature ones here. We're talking about wisdom that is simply beyond these people's capacity to comprehend. So don't worry about them. Keep striving towards understanding those mysteries which are beyond what we've been able to comprehend up to this point. As long as you're doing your best to do the Jesus-y things in everyday life, the rest will take care of itself.
Our words of wisdom are from 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7.
Yet among the mature, we do speak wisdom, though it is not a wisdom of this age or of the rulers of this age, who are doomed to perish.
But we speak of God's wisdom, secret and hidden, which God decreed before the ages for our glory.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
A thousand years ago, across medieval Europe, the Eucharist was celebrated in Latin, a formal liturgical language that most ordinary churchgoers didn't understand. What everyone did understand is that at the pinnacle of the Mass, incense was wafting, altar bells were ringing, and the priest lifted the bread, speaking Jesus' words to consecrate the elements. Hoc est corpus meum. This is my body. People believed that at that very moment, something extraordinary happened. Ordinary bread was transubstantiated into the literal flesh of Jesus. Now, the symbolism was powerful. People perceived the priest to be performing a kind of magic trick by uttering the magic spell, hoc est corpus meum, sacred language heard but not understood. So it's no surprise that over time, street performers and conjurers were able to appropriate hoc est corpus meum into that now familiar magic spell of hocus pocus. And then, through the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, and into our own era of quantum physics, string theory, and AI, the line between hoc est corpus meum and hocus pocus has continued to be blurred. even though science left no doubt that regardless of the incantation at Mass, molecules are not being transformed, believers continued to confound the spiritual with the magical. Never mind that the real miracle Jesus performed was his ability to gather unlikely people around a table and convincing them that this is what a life of wholeness means, this community, each of our lives shared, even in our brokenness, given for one another, especially the most fragile and excluded among us. The holy mystery was not molecules of bread becoming flesh. It was strangers becoming neighbors, a phenomena just as miraculous today as it's ever been. And that's why Evolution Sunday is as important today as it's ever been. Not only do American Christians seem unable to think metaphorically about religion, they seem to be obsessed with denying the fact that science is real. And friends, that is why our country is in the mess that it's in right now. Whole demographics reject objective history, embrace phantasmagorical conspiracy theories, and are manipulated by the government to ignore what they see with their very own eyes. How did we get here? It helps when the skids are greased by generations of snake oil fundamentalist preachers working to brainwash otherwise intelligent people into believing the unbelievable. And it's worse than you think. In a 2024 Gallup poll, 37% of American adults said God created human beings pretty much in their present form all at once within the last 10,000 years or so. That's one out of every three people that you meet. And it's higher if you hang out with white evangelicals, 64% of whom believe that humans were created just 6,000 years ago, and that all the evidence of evolutionary science, biology, archaeology, geology, astronomy, and astrophysics is bunk. And guess what? This group holds a lot of political power. Unbelievable power now that Project 2025 is the official playbook of those currently in charge. It used to be that the thing I worried about most was the ability of these people to manipulate school boards and leverage the contents of textbooks that are then used all over the country. But now, in states where they control school boards and legislatures, they not only threaten the teaching of evolution in favor of a literal biblical view of creationism, they're installing untrained, non-certified chaplains in our public schools to reinforce the teaching of their fantasy biblical worldview. It used to be that people would pat me on the head and say, "Relax, David, you're overplaying the predictions of doom. They're not really going to get away with it. There are guardrails, you know." People would quote Daniel Patrick Moynihan to me saying, "Everyone's entitled to their opinions, but not their own facts." But no more. Every day, we are living in a post-fact reality, where the boundaries between fact and opinion have become dangerously blurred. Driven by fundamentalist Christians, government actions have become completely unmoored from reality. Just this week, Trump's EPA has renounced generations, decades of hard scientific proof about the climate crisis in order to blatantly pad their own pockets. Revoking landmark legislation that acknowledges greenhouse gases as a danger to public health, They are blithely damning coming generations to what may very well be extinction-level global catastrophe. According to a recent Cornell University survey of over 88,000 climate-related studies, more than 99.9% of peer-reviewed scientific papers agree that climate change is real, and it is mainly caused by humans. More than 99.9%! But no. That doesn't fit with the unhinged pre-scientific oil and gas industry-funded worldview of the God is in control crowd. If, in 100 years, humanity is still functioning coherently enough that someone can actually ask the question, who's responsible for their post-apocalyptic nightmare in 2126? They will be justified in pointing a finger directly at us. That's why the approach to faith that we celebrate at the Fountains is such an important witness to the world right now. We value the Bible too much as metaphor to take it literally. We approach the biblical stories of creation and the flood and resurrection as the original authors did, as poetry, not history. We ask, as Paul encourages the Corinthians, the mature questions of why and what does this mean for the community in the long term, rather than what's in it for me right now. We recognize the work of the biblical authors as a good faith effort to stand in awe and wonder before the mystery of the cosmos and the mystery of life, sensing the unimaginable unknowableness of the divine, and then telling a story that tried to both preserve the awe and scale down the unfathomable to a size in which we could see ourselves. Some of you know that before he was a painter, Vincent van Gogh spent 2 years serving as a Dutch Reformed pastor. He spent a lot of time thinking about and trying to express the unexpressible. Lucky for us, his congregation thought he was a lousy pastor, and after they fired him, he found his true calling in the medium of painting. At one point in his career, he wrote, "Whenever I have a terrible need of, dare I say, religion, then I go outside at night and paint the stars." Right? We still marvel at his work's ability to inspire awe. But sadly, it's hard to find many Van Gogh paintings in the Bible. What we do have is the written word, stories, metaphor, musical lyrics, each of which has its own way of getting to the deeper parts of our being, be it emotional, spiritual, whatever. People forget that over 70% of the words attributed to Jesus are fiction. Jesus telling stories. Like any good teacher of wisdom, he knew that a good story with a twist is always better at engaging people than just a pedantic list of do's and don'ts. Sadly, though, the only Christianity most conventional Christians know is the do's and don'ts. Whatever you do, don't make me think. Back when Maddie and Sam were in elementary school, they had an early release day on a Wednesday, and since entry to the Phoenix Art Museum is free on Wednesdays after 3 p.m., we met our docent friend, Naomi Lerman, for a walkthrough of some of the highlights. But I wasn't expecting what happened. Naomi kept talking about this artist who I was going to love, and I kept saying, yeah. And then I came around the corner and was smitten, gobsmacked. Kehinde Wiley is his name. And at the time, the Phoenix Art Museum had two of his paintings. photographs don't begin to do these works any justice. I was mesmerized, not able to tear myself away. At some point, I sensed Sam pulling on my sleeve, saying, "Dad, how long can you look at this one painting?" Well, a long time. And I have not missed a chance to be in the presence of a Kehinde Wiley since. For me, they capture something inexpressible that fills something in me that I didn't know needed to be filled. Viewing them is a religious experience for me. And guess what? I can get that very similar experience when I'm out under the stars, contemplating the cosmos. I can be overwhelmed with awe and reverence and humility and not have a single thought of theology anywhere in my head. And this is one of the places where I think religion needs to start paying attention to science as a partner, not a threat. In this era of in vitro fertilization and DNA mapping, CRISPR gene editing, and being on the threshold of an artificial intelligence singularity, maybe it's time to admit that we could update our stories. Reverend Rich Smith tells the story about how back in the day, early astronomers could see that the planet Neptune had something of an irregular orbit around the sun. Some surmised that whenever it got off course, God intervened to put it back on track. Then, 96 years ago, this week, right here in Arizona, Clyde Tombaugh discovered Pluto. And guess what? It was determined that the gravitational influence of this previously unknown object was just enough to account for Neptune's irregular orbit. God wasn't needed as an explanation anymore. So, just like Pluto itself recently got downgraded from being a planet, God got downgraded as an influence on orbital mechanics. So, now you have a choice. Do you feel threatened by that? Has scientific knowledge become a threat to your understanding of God? Or can you see it for what it is? That our spiritual forebears did the best they could with the information they had. They were well-meaning, but wrong. As Paul told the Corinthians, their so-called wisdom was doomed to perish. They believed in an interventionist God who micromanages all of creation. And anything they couldn't otherwise explain was attributed to God and chalked up to mystery. And now that science is making observations about reality that continue to explain these previous mysteries as functions of a universe governed by laws and principles our forebears could never have imagined, what do we do with that? Paul contrasted the wisdom of this age, or the rulers of this age, with something far superior. God's wisdom, decreed before the ages. As we mature, both as individuals and as a species, if we have much time left as a species, our ever-expanding scientific knowledge, previously secret and hidden wisdom, decreed before the ages, are giving us a whole new way of looking at the world. Fundamentalist Christians claim that their ideas are the timeless capital T truth, and that science is a lie straight from the pits of hell. When what I'd like to suggest is that the fundamentalist creationist view of reality, which in its most rabid North American form is only 100 years old, is the wisdom of this age, doomed to perish. But if we are mature in our spiritual endeavors, we can be eager to embrace scientific discovery as a part of reevaluating our understandings of who we are, where we're going, and our place in the universe. In other words, leaning into the awe, wonder, and mysterious, unknowable aspects of the spiritual life. Today, science is offering us whole new canvases on which to paint and a whole new palette of colors. This generation, one of the first to grow up with an awareness that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old and the Big Bang was 13.7 billion years ago, have a much longer timeline to digest than the 6,000 years offered by the Bible. The religions of the world have always made up stories and parables to try and explain reality, and understanding what, in spiritual terms, are often just hunches. When we consider the sheer magnitude of the universe and how infinitesimally small we are, it gives us a whole different perspective than the pre-Copernican idea that the Earth, and therefore you and me, are the center of it all. Science is laying before us vocabulary, vistas, and new stories that are rife for meaning-making. And those who feel threatened by scientific discoveries need to just get over it. As Paul says, they're doomed to perish. There's no future in trying to stifle reality to defend a pre-scientific worldview that somehow shores up prehistoric or medieval ideas of the divine. These are terrible generalizations, but for the sake of opening things up for continued conversation, let me lean on these old chestnuts. Basic science asks how. Religion asks why. Science seeks facts. Religion seeks meaning. Science seeks information. Religion seeks transformation. They don't have to be in conflict, and you don't have to choose one or the other. Religion and science are not only compatible, they can be collaborative. And I'm not alone in that idea. To paraphrase that great theologian, Albert Einstein, religion without science is blind. Science without religion is lame. Once upon a time, a frog picks up his phone and calls the psychic hotline. His personal psychic advisor tells him, "You are going to meet a beautiful young girl who will want to know everything there is to know about you." The frog is thrilled. "This is great," he says. "Will I meet her at a party?" "No," says the psychic, "in her biology class." The moral of the story? First, don't waste your money on psychics. Second, be careful. The stories we tell ourselves about our hopes for the future are not always moored to reality. Sadly, many pious literalists are like our friend the frog. Their idea of religion bound for a bottle of formaldehyde on a dusty, forgotten shelf of history. Our challenge at present is to not let them take the rest of us down with them. As followers of Jesus, we are called to move beyond the magical thinking of hocus-pocus religious spellcasting. Instead of embracing a faith that dictates its own facts and excludes all but the people you approve of, we need to get back to living into the transformative power that Jesus demonstrated in creating the kind of fellowship that dissolves division, that creates connection, and puts love first as our primary mission. As people of the way, Our task is to help our species transcend our violent and tribal past and evolve into a more compassionate and generative expression of what it means to be truly human, you know, more like Jesus. So, happy Evolution Sunday, and happy Darwin's 217th birthday. May you take Paul's advice and not be so fixated on the outdated wisdom of this age that you miss what science continues to offer in the form of heretofore unfathomable wonders. May you, with Paul, enjoy a healthy skepticism that questions the outdated dogmas of the past and liberates you to stand before the mystery of creation in awe, knowing that you're not separate from creation, but interconnected with it in ways that are mysterious, awe-inspiring, and full of wonder. If you want to make Jesus truly happy, you need to move beyond magical hocus-pocus religion and remember that the magic Jesus seemed to be most interested in was the magic of belonging to the universe and to one another. Be well. Hey, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.